on this edition of The Self-Publishing Show.
I just made a decision there and then that I wasn't going to try and get an agent. I don't think there were any children's authors self-publishing in the UK at the time, nobody British, so I was very much sort of on my own.
Publishing is changing. No more gatekeepers, no more barriers, no one standing between you and your readers. Do you want to make a living from your writing? Join indie bestseller Mark Dawson and first-time author James Blatch as they shine a light on the secrets of self-publishing success. This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Hello, it is The Self-Publishing Show with me, James Blatch.
And me, Mark Dawson.
You're very loud in my ears. Let me turn that down. Is my air conditioning loud? Actually, I've got a really quiet air conditioning unit. There's only 7 air conditioning units in the whole of the UK. As you know, we don't really do air conditioning. And yes, it's a whisper. So what is the T-shirt for people watching on YouTube? Now, let me guess, being you, I'm going to say it's something to do with like a comic book.
No, it's the Karate Kid from the 80s. It's Cobra Kai.
I forget how old you are.
I'm younger than you.
I barely remember the Karate Kid. But then I was out playing and doing healthy things. You were stuck inside, but then you're in Lowestoft, so... Good. Well, let's say a very warm welcome to the podcast and the Self-Publishing Show to our supporters on Patreon. We have some shout-outs to do. You can be shouted out at on this very show if you go to patreon.com/self-publishing show. And this week we are welcoming to our family, into the bosom of our family, Tanya Fry from Missouri, United States of America, Tracy Elliott, and Jack F. Erickson. Which sounds like a great author name. Jack F. Erickson. Did you ever think about having a middle initial? M.J. Dawson.
I've got a middle initial. I decided not to use it.
M.J. Dawson does actually sound quite good. Did you think about it?
No, never crossed my mind. If I was going to write something... Actually, for the kind of SPF books that we've done, I am M.J. Dawson for that, aren't I?
Because I think you're Mark J. Dawson.
Mark J. Dawson, yeah, because we didn't want to mess the also boards up for either of the books. So I wanted to be a bit separate on that one. But I never thought about it for any of my own books. I decided there's only one Mark Dawson.
There's only one. As I sing on the terraces.
Actually, there's lots. Actually, there is another one. There's a guy, there's a professor, Mark Dawson, who has written a book on a fairly unusual aspect of European law. And I've seen some reviews on his book saying that this is a real change in direction from
an MI6. So,
the poor guy, poor guy probably is a little confused about that.
I think yes, John Logsdon has this problem. So John Logsdon, who's an early guest on the podcast, John had actually been on the podcast. He must have been at some point. Yeah, I'm sure he has. I think he was on with his with his friend when they started up Reader Links. But John, who we know well, lives in the Carolinas in the US. If you look up John Logsdon, there's actually quite a notable other John Logsdon who's also a professor, but he's not obscure. I think he's like space. I think he's a spaceman. But that must be, I don't know. I guess if you're, I mean, he does write science fiction, John, but you do have to do a little bit of due diligence. And just because it's your name doesn't mean you can use it, which is an odd thing to say, but that, you know, that is the case.
Yeah, there's some, you want to be looking into that. I think there wasn't there a Stephen King with a PH or no, with a V that was may have had to change his name, I think, because of confusion between one and the other. I've never noticed another writer, at least, you know, one that would be confused with me writing in my genre. So, and you're safe. I don't know any. There are no other Blatches.
There is another James Blatch, but he is writing a book. So we have been in touch because we used in the early days of email, and I have blatch.com. I have that domain, and I used to get emails for him, and the emails that were destined for him would say something like, "Fantastic workout on Tuesday morning on my abs. I was wondering if we could move down to my quads on Thursday." And it turns out he's a bodybuilder in Sydney, Australia.
Is that right?
That is true. Bodybuilder. He's a big bodybuilder. And we were in touch a little bit and sort of laughed about having James Blatch on Facebook. I'm James Blatch. We've got a little bit of confusion here and there. It doesn't happen so much anymore, especially since he was arrested for drug supply in his gyms and went to prison. And I followed all of this and I sent him little notes every now and again because it looked to me like he had a hard... I do think he had a very tough side of the deal there. I think he was badly advised. Anyway, this is another story. And for legal reasons, probably can't go into it. But he's served his time. He's come out. He's now doing quite a lot of, you know, reform type talking and writing. And he wants to write, put it all down into a book. He wasn't supplying recreational drugs. This was, you know, steroids type stuff that was being used in his gym. I think he knows he made some mistakes, but he's come out of it. So he wants to self-publish. He's looking at the whole process of writing. And so, yeah, I mean, that's the only, I can't imagine there's a lot of crossover because, I mean, obviously when people look at me, they see, as you mentioned last week, an Adonis. But I don't know if they think
I was going to say there's not that much chance of a steroid supplying. I should be over careful what I say there.
Well, he has been to prison for it.
Well, I suppose so, yeah. Well, I think you're probably okay. I don't think there's going to be that much crossover there.
I have a fondness for James and his attitude to life. And he's been through the mill. And I can't only imagine what prison is like for, you know, well, I can only imagine what prison is like and to come out of that and grow. So good luck, James, and let us know when your book is published. Yes, but if your name is McDonald and you want to start a burger restaurant, you're in trouble. You know, you, just because it's your name is the kind of point I'm making here. You have to do some due diligence. Right. We are talking about somebody who has a fairly unusual surname, which is Karen Ingalls. It's spelt Inglis, a Scottish surname. Now, Karen, we've mentioned from time to time, and we're going to be talking about children's books. So I'm just going to flag that up ahead of the interview because we know we do get asked a lot about whether it's possible to self-publish children's books commercially and be successful with it and so on. And Karen is walking, breathing, living proof that that is possible. But before then, we want to mention we have a brand new course, which is in the late stages of gestation. Should we say it's in the third trimester, Mark? Do you think the How to Revise Your Book course?
Yeah, but it's not a normal gestation. This is kind of like an elephant gestation period.
So yeah, it's been like my book.
It's been almost as long as your book. It's been a couple of years in the making, but not quite that long. But yes, it is coming soon.
Yeah, it is. I'm editing it together now. It looks and feels unlike other courses we've done because Jenny Nash, who's a fantastic editor, brilliantly has put this course together. She appears in person to give you a kind of nice, warm, fuzzy overview of what's going to happen, spells everything out, and then you get into the detail. I mean, some of the sessions are, you know, so far, they're sort of 40 minutes long. They're quite detailed. Some are quite short and pithy, but it's a really nicely laid out course. It will completely...
I think before you go on, we should probably say what the course is called and what it does, because we haven't done that yet.
It's about editing your books, called Revise. It's actually about revising your book. So that's a key part of this. So it's basically after your first draft, how you go about the process of revising that to produce your second draft, which is the one probably that will go to copy edit and so on. I mean, depending on how many drafts you do, if you're in my world, you do about 3 or 4 of them. But this 100. This is how to break down that first draft. And I mean, I think the tagline we're going to use in marketing this course is how to go from good to great. So this is about really elevating your book up to great, identifying those problems, and there's lots of methods she talks about. The stoplight method is one of them, which is traffic lights in the UK. So the red bits that need, you know, absolute showstoppers, and the green bits or the amber bits, I suppose, which are, do they have amber lights in America? I think they have amber lights. We have amber between Rio, the ones that need fixing, and how to go about that process. So how to identify it, how to go about it, with lots of little processes to help you along. Now, we haven't got to the stage of pricing this up or anything yet. We nearly always, and I'm sure we will do this, have a very good discount in the first month to give it a good boost, which worked really well for the bestseller course because lots of people who were waiting for it got it at a great price there and then. Still doing very well, the bestseller course, I should say, up to full price now. We will do the same thing with the revise course. So if you're interested in it, you can go to selfpublishingformula.com/revise, R-E-V-I-S-E. So there'll either be a wait list page there, or when the course launches, that will be the place to go read all about it and decide whether you want to sign up or not. And I guess we will also sort out a webinar. We'll get Jenny onto a webinar. We'll teach some of that process. We'll choose one area and really go into detail that would be useful for you, regardless whether you're going to get the course or not. We always want our webinars to be very useful to people because we appreciate your time. Good. So let me just ask you, we will do a session. We'll perhaps get Jenny back onto the podcast ahead of our next book lab just to talk about the revision process. I think that'd be a good idea anyway. What is your process at the moment, Mark? And I know every time I ask you this, you say, well, I'm quite used to it now. I know everything I'm doing. I just write a draft and I send it to my friend and it's done. You always make it sound really easy, but there must be, from the first idea and writing you do to the final publication, a process you go through.
Yeah, there's a process, but I've done it so many times now that it's rote, really. So I've just done it, just finished a book, and well, it's going to be out next week. So what did I do this time? So yeah, the book gets finished. It goes to my copy editor, Jennifer. Jennifer copy edits it. It comes back to me. It then goes to the beta readers. So I think I had about 300 downloads this time out of 500 or 600 people who got the email. They come back with their comments, and they're always amazing. So, I mean, and really varied. So there's a scene in the new book, which I tweaked this morning, where Milton creates some, it's kind of like Home Alone with live ammunition. So he cool. does some booby traps, and there's a fuel bomb. So you have a big tank of gasoline and some dynamite underneath the tank, and the dynamite explodes and the petrol or gasoline ignites. And one of my readers, I didn't know this, but he went into so much detail. It was really useful. He has an army background, I think, in probably something to do with bomb disposal. And he suggested that the gasoline wouldn't normally ignite with that kind of ignition. So what you needed to do was it needs to have a thickening agent. A live podcast.
Imitable detail.
You need to use something to thicken it up, and then you need to add something else, which is acts as an ignition agent. I won't say what that is, although I just realized I have put it in the book. So it's not the kind of thing that you would know to Google, and you probably wouldn't want to Google it anyway. So that was great. Another thing, there's a large revolver called a Peacemaker, and I had it in a pocket, and a guy said to me, "Look, I have a Peacemaker. I took it out and tested it to see. It weighs 2 pounds. It won't go in a pocket, so you have to cinch it with your belt." So all that kind of stuff is really helpful. That's all done. So this is not so much the actual. I mean, Jenny is talking more about structure and character and developing those kinds of aspects. This for me, I think I've kind of got that down now. Yeah. I don't usually need to deal with anything in that, because I've written so much. But the detail that this picks up is kind of factual errors, also typos. I mean, they pick up. Everyone will pick up typos that have slipped through the professional process. And you know, there was a couple I did this morning, actually, kind of late submissions from readers who'd seen things that the other 200 and 300 hadn't.
Yeah.
So you know, wow. Just goes to show some people see one thing, others don't. You know, So that's good to that stage. Then it goes to my proofreader, who picks up to make sure that I haven't introduced any new errors in the edits, which is possible. And then comes back to me, and then it's good to go. That's the process for me now.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jenny's course is definitely about development rather than copy edits and so on. It's about getting the story so that people want to turn the page. So the book works in this sort of editorial language. Actually, one of the things we're going to do, I don't know if it'll be ready for launch. I don't want to delay the launch anymore, but hopefully it will be ready, but people will get it if they purchase the course anyway, is Pro Writing Aid, who we've had a couple of conversations with recently, are going to put together a mini course on how to use Pro Writing Aid to pick up a lot of the things you're talking about, which is not just typos with Pro Writing Aid. It's also about using more efficient language and cutting down on the adverbs, etc. So we'll put that course, we'll bundle that with how to revise. So that's the next stage. Jenny doesn't do typos. You know, this is about whether your character works. You don't have to worry about that at that stage of the process. Okay, good. So yeah, selfpublishingformula.com/revise if you want to learn all about that. And as I think about this, we make it up as we go along, but as I think about this, we will get Jenny onto a podcast so we can spend a good 40 minutes talking about this process, which I think will be very useful. Okay, right. Our interviewee this week is Karen Ingalls, and she is someone we met for the first time at London Book Fair maybe 3 or 4 years ago. We've kept in touch with her. She appeared on a panel at the self-publishing show Live in London, and she is commercially successful. She's a self-publisher. She's one of those people who's just got it right, using Amazon ads, finding sales, making life-changing amounts of money that just make a difference to her and her family's life. And she's doing it all through writing children's books, which is a little bit unusual and a question we get asked a lot. So let's find out how she did it. Here's Karen.
This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Karen Ingalls, welcome to The Self-Publishing Show. Did I pronounce your surname correctly?
You did. You've become a real expert.
I have. You ticked me off. And now I'm the one who ticks other people off who always say Inglis. I guess everyone says Inglis.
It's just such a pain, especially if you're booking restaurants, because you say Ingalls, they write ES.
Yeah.
And you say, you know, it's Inglis, they say, oh, English. No. So I usually just say I-N-G-L-I-S.
And of course, we passed through Ingalls in, I think, Louisiana or somewhere. I think it was Ingalls, Louisiana or North Florida. And it was a one-horse town, I have to tell you, Karen. You need, if that's in your extended family and you're going to inherit it, it's going to be a bit like Schitt's Creek, if you've seen that sitcom.
So they must have come from Scotland, you know, remote part of Scotland, yeah.
Well, you're in London now, and you are an author, and you write children's books. You've also, I think, done a women's fiction novel or so.
I've done the non-fiction book, How to Self-Publish and Market a Children's Book.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's go through a little bit of that. So let's start with, I guess, did it start with the children's books for you?
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah, I've not done any adult writing other than, you know, when I was a student, and that's all in a drawer somewhere. Yes. So I started writing children's books when our children were little, sort of 2, 3, and I was reading books to them, and some of them I thought were great and some of them not so great. So I started mucking around with the idea of a fox story after I saw a fox, and it sort of went from there. And then I moved on to I had that moment where I walked into some friends' gardens who'd just moved to Notting Hill, and they had a communal garden at the back of their apartment. And I was so jealous, and it was just so magical. And that was the moment that the idea for The Secret Lake came to me. But that was a long, long time ago. That was back in the sort of early to mid 90s. It's a long time ago. So I started drafting then. But it was one of those things in the olden days where you send everything off in an envelope. It comes back 6 weeks later because you couldn't do it by internet in those days. And it all ended up in a box, which is down there in my office for 10 years. Went away, and I went back to my day job of writing because the kids had got a bit older. And it was when I took a sabbatical in 2010, end of 2010, and I thought I'll get that writing out again, that I just thought, actually, this is good, and particularly The Secret Lake. I thought, this is a good story. And so I worked with a friend who was an editor just to sort of knock it into a bit better shape, and then discovered that self-publishing was happening. And I just made a decision there and then that I wasn't going to try and get an agent. There were very, very, I don't think there were any children's authors self-publishing in the UK at the time. There was just I knew of Joanna, obviously being adult, but nobody British. So I was very much sort of on my own. I used to spend hours in the Create Space forums chatting with gurus on formatting and God knows what.
I was going to say, so illustrations are so important in children's books. And when you write the book at the beginning, presumably you're just doing the writing. And if it had been, had you been picked up traditionally, they would have matched you with an illustrator, or did you present the whole thing?
Well, no, because The Secret Lake, which is the one over there, the green one, you can see behind me, I don't know if you can. But
I can. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see that.
Yeah, the Secret Lake is not a chapter book in the sense it doesn't have any illustrations inside it. It's what they call a middle grade novel. So a bit like if you bought Harry Potter, there's no pictures inside it.
Gotcha.
Unless you made it. I might make a special edition actually now. But so that never was. But no, in answer to your question, if you are writing a book that does have illustrations, and you can see again behind me, there's some black and white illustrations there from Eek the Runaway Alien and Walter Brown. Now, if you were going to a traditional publisher, you wouldn't be submitting anything like that. You would just send the manuscript, and they like to take care of images. Similarly, if you were even doing a picture book, That's the wisdom, that they're not interested in you sending pictures because they like to match you with their own artists.
I was trying to think. So in my childhood, I mean, I think children's books, I have to say, have got better since I was a child. A lot of Enid Blyton, who I know this is blasphemy, but I came to loathe when my children were little reading Enid Blyton to them. But I seem to remember loving it when I was a child. But anyway, they were all, I guess, what you described, middle grade novels, because they were novels without illustrations. Whereas today, my son reads, and I'm trying to remember his name, Tom somebody?
Tom Gates.
Now, Tom Gates got my son into reading. He's sort of fallen out of reading a bit now again. But
yeah.
But they were a real, and David Walliams, I think, probably fits into this category, a real mishmash of illustration and writing.
Yeah.
David,
yeah.
I saw your little hunch there with Dave Williams. He gets a bad press at the moment, but lots of kids love his books.
Yeah, I mean, I have never read any of his books, to be honest. He has had quite a bad Twitter storm just recently. I don't know if you noticed that. I haven't read any of his, but I do agree. You can't be a snob about it. Anything that makes kids read is good, as far as I'm concerned. And funnily enough, Eek, back there, the runaway alien, I wrote because George, our oldest son, the one who's now a lawyer, just wouldn't read, and he was just interested in football. And I thought, well, how can I get him to read? And I came up with a story of an alien who runs away from space to Earth because he loves football and the World Cup's on. And I put illustration, you know, I decided this was going to have black and white illustrations throughout it. So, and that has had very good feedback from schools and reading charities, because it gets kids reading. So, you know, I can't really judge David Walliams' novels because I haven't read them. I suppose one feels slightly frustrated that every chart you open, he's number one on it, whatever he puts out.
Yeah, so is J.K. Rowling in every Amazon chart I ever open. I was just thinking about the illustration side of things, and that is a more complicated process, I guess, when you're self-publishing. So when you decided to do the Alien book, you had already gone down the self-publishing route at that point. So even though it was going to be a book heavy on illustrations, you were working out how to do that as a self-publisher.
Yeah, I was. And, you know, I very much sort of taught myself, really. I'd found an illustrator for the front cover, because that front cover, I tried to draw, well, I have two very artistic sisters, and both had promised they would draw me an alien and never did. So I thought, well, I'll have a go. And I used Microsoft's Paint. And actually, funnily enough, the final front cover, I'm just going to quickly pick up a copy to show you. The final front, sorry, actually, this is one of the proof copies. The final front cover for it, which you can sort of see there, that was the one of the latest proof. I actually drew this alien, would you believe?
I'm
not an artist. I went on to Microsoft Paint, and I'm left-handed and I use a mouse with my right hand for some bizarre reason. And I worked out how to try and draw this alien, but he looked absolutely, at the end, it was exact, but it had all black lines around it, no depth to it, no shadow that you can see there. And so I went online, long story short, and ended up just Googling, and ended up on that website that at the time was called Elance. It's now called something else. I've forgotten the name. And Upworks, it's called now.
Oh, yes,
and
Upworks,
that's where I found Damir Kundalik, who had illustrated, who became my illustrator for all of those books. And then he basically fixed him for me. And then throughout the book, you know, we've got these things. But what I tended to do was I would send him little stick drawings, and they'd say, look, can you, you know, this is what I imagine. Can you make it into a, you know, illustration? But what was very interesting was mapping out where that then fits in the book.
Yeah.
Having to put the pieces of paper all along the kitchen table. And actually, when you're reading it, you get a sense of, all right, if I was a kid who didn't like reading, I'd probably by now be getting bored because there's not a picture. Yeah. You know, it was kind of a bit like that. And to begin with, it was very, the first time I did it, I was using somebody over in the States, a great guy called Doug, for doing all the formatting. Now I have Vellum, you know, which, as we all know, is just amazing. And so I must have done an update or I did the ebook, I can't remember. It was so easy to drop in the pictures and reflow it all. And even if, you know, even for the print book, when I wanted to update the back matter, that was it. I could now do that myself. But while I was in there, I was able to move a few things around, and it wasn't a problem.
Yeah. Vellum does make everything a pleasurable pleasure to work on. So you
I've now moved on to something different. This one here, this is literally just come out, literally. This is called the Tell Me Tree. And in the last two picture books I've done, I've used a friend who I didn't know could illustrate children's books. You know, she's our architect, and I've known her for 25, 30 years. And she's always made cards and beautiful things, but I never thought to say, can you illustrate children's stories? But you know, she sort of does this sort of thing, you know, she's absolutely amazing. And the difference there is she does not work digitally. She works pen and ink. So that's been another new learning curve as to,
because you have to sort of scan them in, do you?
Has to be scanned in. And what I do, you know, now, you know, for all of my colour picture books now, I pay with Anne. And then I use a layout artist as well, because I can't lay out. I know the story, and I worked out which pages I want the story to go on. And for this one, we pretty much worked the flow. But I used someone called Rachel Lawston, who's done my last few books for layout.
Amazing.
She does a lot of traditional publishing stuff.
Just a technical question. When you scan them in, is that some sort of specialised professional scan, or just the kind of scanners we have on our home printers?
I don't know. I haven't seen Anne's scanner, but I think it's just something you would have at home. I know as an architect, she's got it. And I think you can choose when you scan, or whether your scan goes up to either 600 DPI or whatever it is. I don't, you know, it's slightly out of my knowledge thing, but that, I know that's what Rachel needed then, in order to then bring that all into Illustrator and do the layouts and then Photoshop or whatever.
And you sell both the ebook and the print versions of all your books, because some of these obviously will work a lot better as print books, I'd imagine.
Yeah, no. So I sell them, all of them, in both formats, but I sell, you know, 95% or more of all my book sales are print. Again, just coming back to the vellum thing, as far as the middle grade novels and the chapter books go, that's much more doable these days because of vellum, because it's so much easier just to take your text, put it into vellum, and off you go. Whereas the olden days, it was, it's like nightmares remembering it. But also what's happened with the picture books now, which is, I'm really pleased about, is when you've got a picture book, you can't do that thing of having flowable text. So, you know, if you're on an iPad or something, and you're on your Kindle and you're reading, you can change the size of the font and all that stuff. You can get away with having what, and that's called reflowable. And you can get away with that with a chapter book, with things like Eek, the Runaway Alien. So if the kids pick a larger typeface, and it might be that one of the images will then move on to the next page. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And sometimes you end up that there'll just be a gap below the image, because somehow it's sensed that the next paragraph. And that's, I think people are used to that. They're used to the fact that, whereas in a print book, you're never going to have a big gap there, because it's not the end of the chapter. That might occasionally happen with one of those. So that's fine for Kindle, but you can't do it with a book like this, because many of the pages rely on the sort of double page spread. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
And so if you then enlarged it and this all got separated, that doesn't work. And so the only way around that in the olden days was, I say the olden days, I did for Ferdinand Fox use, and they're very good, they're a company called eBook Partnership, and there are others, and Kindle and eBook, Apple and all that, you have to have a fixed layout EPUB, it's called, or fixed layout file, which means that it will keep everything together, no matter what you do. And just getting a format like that's quite complicated. Now, what's happened is, in the last couple of years, is that Kindle Direct Publishing has come up with some software. Well, it's been around for a while, but when I first tested it a few years ago, it was a nightmare. But it is hugely improved. I discovered this time last year when The Christmas Tree Wish came out, that picture book that's over there. It's free. And it's very easy to upload your print-ready PDF, and it retains it all. And then you can just add in what's called pop-up text, which means that, obviously, I mean, if you're getting, not many people will be reading picture books on these things, but some grandparents might with their kids on an iPad or something. And it just could be that sometimes the text might be hard to read. And so what they've got is a thing where you tap it and the text gets bigger and you have to put that in yourself.
Okay.
If anyone wants to look at it, if they go to my author website, KarenInglisAuthor.com, and click on the blog thing, I've done it on Self-Publishing Adventures, because obviously it was aimed at writers. So selfpublishingadventures.com, my latest and one of my rare blog posts, because I'm so useless. But it does show examples of how that works.
Well, we'll put these links into the show notes so people can find them. I noticed
It's just become a lot easier to do that. And the reason, probably sort of related to your question, the reason I do the Kindle books is not because I know I'm going to sell many, but it's another opportunity for marketing, because you've got obviously Amazon advertising. You can advertise both instances of your book, so it's another opportunity for that. And then also, if you want to, you can use the 5 free days if you're in KDP Select, which I am, to make it free to to maybe encourage early reviews. And I will be doing that for this one. I just haven't got round to it yet because it's only just gone live. But
let's talk about sales and marketing and your results, because we do get asked a lot. You know, Mark teaches what he teaches and he writes thrillers, and a lot of the students who are sort of high profile in our community are genre fiction writers. And so people who write nonfiction and children's books and one or two of those other areas come to us quite often and say, does this stuff, you know, in general terms, not just what Mark teaches, does self-publishing work for children's authors? And you're a name we quote to people to say, yes, you know, that it can work. So I think the bottom line here is this has been a successful commercial venture for you.
Oh, definitely. And Amazon advertising was a game changer. I mean, The Secret Lake was selling incredibly well, but only as much as I could almost do school visits and a bit of my own social media until the end of 2017, really. And it was when Amazon UK advertising came. I managed to get into the Advantage program in early. We had an interview, didn't we?
Yeah.
London Book Fair, and I remember saying to you, oh, my sales are suddenly going up. And that was a game changer. And I think knowing how to run those ads is really important now, because as we all know, it's sort of pay to play now. You know, to get that visibility, you do need to be doing some advertising. And if you've got a good book, then, you know, you've got as good a chance as anybody else, you know. But it does come down to having the good story. I mean, you know, The Secret Lake it's sold over 200,000 copies now.
Wow.
And it's been, I did check before we came on just to see what it was. So I've written down. So in the USA, it's ranked 151 in all print books today.
Wow.
And not just children's. In the UK, 117, and in Canada, 62. But I think although advertising obviously has really helped give it visibility, it is a very special story. So, you know, all my other books aren't selling that well. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's not, there has to be something good about the story as well.
So, The Secret Lake's been your most successful book commercially.
Yes.
But why then do you produce the other picture books and not do another Secret Lake style?
Because I always write stories that come to me.
Okay.
I can't say, I'm going to write a story about this. It just doesn't somehow work. And there's always just at the time I might be thinking, oh, well, shall I see if I could come up with a sequel for The Secret Lake, which I get asked a lot. There's some other story thing going on in my mind, which I need to just get out of the way, if you like. And, you know, don't get me wrong, you know, things like The Christmas Tree Wish for a picture book came out last Christmas and it sold in the UK, I think, 1,500 copies in the space of a very short space of time. And that was starting off with no reviews. And now we've got Christmas coming around, I expect it to do better. And it got a bestseller badge in France. I mean, it sold far fewer there, but it, because I had it translated into French. But so it does, the other ones, don't get me wrong, it doesn't have to be as good as The Secret Lake for you to make money. My books are in profit on those Amazon ads, you know, all of them, but they just aren't selling in those huge, huge numbers anymore than The Secret Lake.
It all adds up.
Exception.
And so I wanted to ask you a little bit about the margins, because when we're now marketing for Fuse Books, a series, and I do notice, as people do when they upload and create their products on KDP, that the margins on print are well, to have a decent margin, to make a decent amount, the print book does get quite expensive, doesn't it?
Well, I sell The Secret Lake in the UK for $6.99, and I've got a chart here, actually. I wonder if it tells me what my royalty is. Yeah, I've got this chart I have to refer to, because you know when you're doing your Amazon ads and you've got to work out, have to sort of assess what the ACoS is, and I can't remember, because of course I'm print, which makes it even more complicated.
And they're about to separate them out, aren't they? I've got an email this morning.
They have, and it's a bloody nightmare, I tell you. I've had a few conversations, actually, with Janet Margot in the Facebook groups about this, and I've yet to go in and really see what I'm going to do about it. But no, so in the UK, I sell for £6.99, and on the royalty I get, if it's selling at the full price, I'll get, I always get the same royalty, £2.27. So, okay. Yeah. And USA, if it sells at $7.99, I get a royalty of $2.48. I mean, I don't know whether...
So that surprised me a little bit, just because they often end up, and I guess it's the number of pages in a paperback, you often end up having to sell paperbacks at $15, $16 to try and make $1 or $2 on them. But then the books I'm marketing are very long, they're 130,000 words, so that's probably the reason.
Oh, yeah, because I'm on 22,500 words, 23,000 words. So it's different in that sense, children's books. There's a slight advantage, I suppose.
The print costs are lower.
Downside is that you haven't got your customer on the end of the line. It's, you know, you're having to get through the gatekeepers, which are the parents and all that stuff. So there's sort of, you win some, you lose some.
Yeah, so let's talk about that a bit then. So you use Amazon ads. Do you use Facebook ads at all?
No, every time I keep meaning to go back and have another go. But every time I do, it just takes a load of my money. Okay. And also, to be honest, I should go back and try with The Secret, like, particularly for places like Australia, because... You know, I think it is starting to sell over there now, but, you know, there's no way to advertise on Amazon in Australia, as far as I'm aware. So I could probably target there. But I'm so busy trying to monitor everything going on and do the, you know, I've just finished doing this and now I'm doing translations and I've been doing foreign rights deals. So I think, God, if I was going to do Facebook advertising, I'd need to really clear my decks for 2 weeks and go back in, because I know I saw your updated module. I did watch it while I was in the gym, if you remember what they are. A few months ago, on, you know, your updated module on Facebook marketing, and the fact they've now got that Creative Studio where you can go
Creative
in and
pub, yeah,
pub, yeah, it looked fantastic, and it was like, oh, I must go and try it,
which is great. Yeah, I love the Creative Pub.
So it is something I need to go back and try when, you know, Amazon stops mucking around doing things like what it's just done now with all this.
Well, there'll be more. There's more changes to come. They are. I mean, I think the changes gradually will make the platform better. And I suspect, don't quote me on this, but I suspect the move to separating out attribution on Amazon is a forerunner to page reads coming in.
Okay.
Because they're trying to work out how to do that. And that is imminent-ish this year, hopefully. Yeah.
Yes, because the problem I have at the moment with this thing that they've just brought in is that, so I advertise over in America. I have a couple of auto ads for The Secret Lake, which have custom text underneath them, which is really useful for children's books. And they perform well. But traditionally what they've done is they've had lots of clicks and then the sales figures were very high, but when you looked at them, they were actually nearly all paperbacks they were selling. And so I could tell it was all okay. The ACoS was around 22% or something, I've got my break even thing here. I know where, you know, I can look at it in a glance. But what's happened now, as I go and look at them, it's showing, you know, I don't know, 64 clicks, 8 sales, and an ACoS of $250.
Which is still profitable, probably.
Which is, I've got, at the moment, I can't work out other than...
It's complicated.
I've got a big spreadsheet, which once a month I'll have a look at, where I'll just look at my overall sales and look at what I'm spending and just make sure it hasn't changed.
I recently spent a full day doing nothing but trying to work out what the break-even ACoS was on the books we sell, and I put a lot of maths into it. And that came out, it sort of was showing me it's about 600 or 700% on ACOS was still profitable. But that's where we're very heavily skewed towards page read, like 72%.
Okay. Because I know one thing I often say to children's authors who say, how do I know? And I said, well, look, I remember writing this down because I'm not mathematical. The royalty divided by the on sale price is the paperback break even ACOS. So the royalty divided by the on sale price, because sometimes Amazon will reduce the price of your book. And if it does that, your ACOS break-even will change because you still get the same royalty no matter what. But one thing that's puzzled me, page reads isn't such a big deal for me. I do get now, I do since lockdown in particular, they've gone up. I think I get about 6,000 page reads a day, something like that, with the secret late, but I sort of ignore them. But what I couldn't, with that page read thing, if you're advertising, say, your third book, how do you take account of the cost of that advertising if you've already sort of built into that your first advertising campaign, the fact that they were going to be reading that third book that you're now advertising? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I only advertise book one in the series
because they're
quite closely linked. And so the two unknowns are how to attribute page reads to your advertising and... and of course, read through, which is what you're referring to, is what the benefit of going of people who go on to your series.
Read through thing. That's what I was.
So we use benchmarking. So you look at what happened before you started advertising, what happens after advertising, and I've written a blog on this recently, actually. But yes, it's going to change when they bring in attributable page reads to your advertising.
Yeah, and I watched your podcast the other day with the guy from Prestason.
Yes.
It sounds as though they're very keen to do whatever they can to help with that.
They are, and they're very close with Amazon. So I actually had a call a couple of nights ago with the guy in charge of the Amazon API, which is the back end of the advertising process. And he is all over Prestason and SPF and publishers. And Amazon are, it can be frustrating when things change with the platform, but I think genuinely they're going to change for the better. The Facebook ads platform for me is much more pleasurable to use and operate. I really enjoy it, actually.
I must.
Yeah, something for your future. Anyway, we want to get stuff out of you rather than you get stuff out of me. That's for another day. So you have this great success. You're kind of banker, if you like, is Secret Lake, which is great. Congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you.
All the others build up together as well. So this is earnings for you that are equivalent to a kind of full-time job.
More.
Excellent.
Yeah. I mean, my consultancy work I used to do was well paid because I was on a good day rate. But no, this is probably, this particularly in the last 6 months, I would say, it's very good earnings. So, which was at one point when I was looking at what was I was spending on the ads, and I was slightly panicking, thinking, oh my God, I've got my husband to check all my figures, because I was a bit worried that I might have it all wrong, if you know what I mean, that I was spending all this money and not going to be making enough. But not bad.
Good.
That way.
So it is possible children's books can be self-published, can be marketed by yourself and be profitable and turn into a career.
Yeah, but you have to do it properly and put in all the work and things like, I think I said on the blog the other day, now you put in that advanced, I've hesitated a bit when people have said to me, should I do the course? Because it's a lot of money to shell out. And I'm very aware with children's authors, I remember how it was for me that really it's hard to make a living, but you have to have, it has to be a very long, you have to look at it as a very long-term investment, but also be prepared to put that time in. But I've always done that. So way back in, I was telling you, in the days of 2011, I was in hours in the CreateSpace communities learning how it all worked. I got into Amazon Advantage. I'm kind of, that's how I am. So you've got to be quite driven, I suppose, as well. And there are some successful children's authors. I mean, Gemma Hatt, doing really well. So, and if you write in a series like Gemma does, that's even better, So.
Foreign rights is an area that you're, is that profitable for you at the moment?
Well, it is profitable in the sense that I used to, a couple of years ago, I was looking at ways to try and find, get in contact with overseas publishers. But what's, and you know, it's a long, laborious process. You've got to sort of go through catalogues or reverse engineer, trying to find the names and the right contacts. And it wasn't really getting very far. But what's happened is, since The Secret Lake has been selling so well, they're just contacting me. So I've now sold, so I haven't had to do the legwork in the sense of finding the people. What has been quite time consuming, but all the way I thought, no, this is good, because the more I get to understand it, the more I'm in a position for the next deal to be, I know what I'm talking about. It's just getting the contract terms and what have you. So the first deal was a couple of years ago, it was Albania, and then Russia. And now I've had Turkey, I've just signed, and I'm about to sign for the Czech Republic. And I've also had China and Ukraine. And what's happened is that I've, as time's gone on, particularly in the case of Russia, they, that on that occasion, sent me the contract, which when I looked at it, it was a bit of a mishmash, but it had clearly been done by, I don't know, someone like David Williams' lawyers. So I thought, oh, this is useful. You know, this is quite useful, because I can sort of, because I have a plain, I have a business plain English copywriting hat on. I could see that it really needed plain Englishing, a lot of it. And I thought, well, I'll use some useful stuff in here when I go to the next contract, which is what I've now done. And the last couple, I've actually said, right, you know, I'll supply you the contract. Sort of, here it is. It's all much more plain English, but it's got all the right stuff in it. You know, you've got to be careful about what you're giving away and reversion rights and all that stuff.
But okay, the nice thing, I suppose, from a self-publishing point of view, it makes you hybrid in a way, but you basically sell the rights and then somebody else is then dealing with all the formatting and printing and...
Yeah, because if it's going to be in Russian, there's no way I can do anything, you know. But what I am separately doing, which is unrelated to that, is I have commissioned a German translation of The Secret Lake, a bit like Mark's done.
Oh, yes.
And that's actually, the manuscript is due back to me today. And I did a dry run at Christmas with The Christmas Tree Wish, that little Christmas book you can see over there. I had that translated into German and into French. So I paid a German translator, I paid a German editor, ditto French, because even though I have a French degree, I'm not supposing that I would know what the right voice is, you know. I had, you know, so I thought, we do it properly. Ironically, the French one sold more than the German, but they both sold. And but I've just decided with The Secret Lake, I'm going to try. It's, you know, it's selling consistently on the German site now that we can do the German advertising. I mean, not in huge numbers, but I'm making a profit on the ads.
Good.
And I thought, well, let's, you know, what it's a bit like Mark. So what The Secret Lake has allowed me to do is to invest some of that income. Yes. So basically, I did a dry run at Christmas with the picture book, and I did, it was a lot of research to find Joanna, the girl who's done the translation. I was reverse engineering, looking on Amazon at which traditionally published books had been published there in German, and then finding out the name of the translator, then Googling it and going that way. But I was also looking on, you can find, if it's not difficult, you can find German or French or whichever language you want to translate into, you can find their literary translators associations and then find names that way. I can't remember which way, but I found Joanna, she did that. And then I found separately an editor in a similar way. And then I've just decided to try it this time. So she's just done The Secret Lake. I then needed an editor. Well, now this is obviously a bigger job. And actually, I thought I'd have a quick look on Readsy, because, you know, they've just started doing the translation side of things. They have very few children's ones on there, but there was one. And I've gone through Readsy. Actually, turned out she was on my list, but, you know, it doesn't matter. I don't mind giving Ricardo.
Yeah,
I like to support what they're doing anyway. Yeah. So I've used them once before. And so that will be coming back to me, and then the editor will be taking it over. And I will, you know, and then they will have a conversation, and then there's a separate German proofreader that the editors recommended to me, who's going to proofread it. So that's a whole, you know, new thing, and we'll see. And if it works well, I might get her to do EEK, you know, we'll see.
So there is a lot of work in being a children's author and self-publishing, as you say, and you do have to be on top of all that detail. Some of the advantages, though, I guess, translation costs will be a lot less for you than they are for a fiction author who writes 100,000 word novel, which is a positive thing, and will help with margins.
It's all based on words, isn't it? Yeah.
But one of the disadvantages, which you did refer to earlier, which I just want to sort of finish by talking about, is the fact that you can't advertise to your readers very easily. You're advertising to their grandparents and parents and older uncles and aunts, I guess. So how, tell me how that works with you. I mean, how do you target?
Well, so interestingly, when I used to try the Facebook advertising thing, I would go in and select, you know, parents with kids, 8 to 12, grandparents, whatever it was. But somehow it didn't work. It just ate my money, as it were. Now, I think if I went and tried that now, I might have better luck because I've got way more social proof with the Secret Lake. So that's one way you can do it. Personally, for me, you know, until Amazon advertising came along, mine was through school visits. It was just setting up school visits and making my website look friendly and all the rest of it, and asking in the back of the Secret Lake, if you enjoy it, please please consider leaving a review, ask a grown-up to help you, because you've then got to be very careful about GDPR and all that stuff. But I think what's happened, the tipping point with the Secret Lake again has been because it's now sold so many books, kids are telling each other about it, and the more that tell each other about it, the more they then nag the parents to buy it. And I've actually now also got a separate short print run arrangement with Clay's Publishing.
Oh yes.
And they supply Gardeners for me, because I sell a lot of books now through Gardeners, the reason I do that is that as you probably will know, or Mark will have understood, which is why he's probably gone with the publisher, is that if you do print on demand and someone goes into a bookshop, invariably the bookshop will tell you, well, we can't get it for 3 weeks, or it's problematic because it's print on demand. And they can get it, but it's problematic. And so I suddenly thought, gosh, if all these kids are now talking about the Secret Lake and their parents go into bookshops and they're told it's 3 weeks delivery, that's not going to look good. I will now go to Clay's. And so they print me. I've just had an order of 500. They keep 100 at a time. And then when Gardeners orders, they supply them. And then when their stock runs low, I send them some back. And it's, you know, but that's sort of come back to what you were talking about. It's kids telling each other now is actually probably my main marketing thing. And they're also leaving lots of the reviews on Amazon have gone through the roof. And, you know, I guess that's just a function of the volume of the books being sold. They're also leaving reviews. I've got a site called thesecretlake.com, which I set up when I first got the book before I had my author website. And I had a page on there. You know, I was quite sort of in the early days. I had free pages that they could read. So, and those are still on there. I remember people saying to me, oh, you're making your chapters. That's interesting. That's odd, putting free parts of your book online and a little bit snooty. And I thought, well, how else am I going to get people to know about this book since it's self-published? But I also had a page on there called reviews. So if you go there and you look at thesecretlake.com and you read /reviews, loads and loads of children now leave reviews on there.
Wow.
And when I put it together, I did it in such a way that it makes it abundantly clear that you have to get a grown-up's permission, you've got to use an avatar, your email address will not be reused, and they go in and I always reply to them.
I was just full of praise, really, that you worked really hard, Karen, at making this, at getting over some of the what look like insurmountable hurdles, that you can't market to children, you can't have connection with children because they don't have the online presence, and it's all fraught with GDPR. But you've worked hard to do that. And the Amazon adverts, in terms of targeting them?
Well, you can't. Oh, well, there it's just the same as it would be for any book. So I will be targeting by genre, like, you know, picture books for ages 3 to 5, or, you know, adventure books for ages 8 to 11. You know, if you think about it, it's no real difference. That's all you can do. I mean, obviously, before lockdown, and hopefully things will go back to normal, you've got your school visits and all that stuff, which I still say, and, you know, and how to self-publish the market of children's book, you know, start local. You've got to sort of start building your brand, you know, and you can do that locally as well. I mean, there is a whole army, and I really take my hats off to them in the States, particularly, of children's authors who do a whole different thing. They don't do self-publishing. So they do self-publishing, but they don't do the print-on-demand model. They actually order their books from China and have them delivered in truckloads, literally, you know, so 2,000 at a time. And I just...
On the economics of... I mean, Clays are a very famous and old book printers in the UK. I can remember reading Clays and Ives in books when I was a kid, so they've been around a long time. In terms of the economics of that, although you have to pay up front, I'm assuming the print costs are lower than what you're being charged on POD from Amazon.
So it only makes sense, and I've advised children's authors on this before, the Clays thing only makes sense if you know you've got a bestseller, is what I would say. Right. There's no point doing it otherwise, because you're not going to sell enough, because people aren't going to walk into bookshops and ask for your book unless they know about you. And that was the problem I faced in the early days. And so you don't really want to be going. And so therefore Clays becomes effective in terms of print cost for sort of anything above 100 books, as far as something like The Secret Lake goes. It starts to become on a par with what you might pay from Ingram Spark, for example. Okay. Plus you've got the benefit that they've got this arrangement with Gardeners that they will send stuff to them and they will hold the stock.
And Gardeners are a wholesale distributor of books.
They're
in the
a wholesaler.
UK,
and they're and now, of course, I think they've now taken Bertram's as just folded, but Bertram's is another one, but they've folded, and I think Gardeners have taken over their stock or something. But I would only, you know, people agonize over getting into bookshops, but I kind of say, with my other books, I'm not worrying about it, because you can't, you know, the effort involved is not worth the return. You want to focus on getting those books sold at your at local events, at school events, and online. I mean, the other big thing that I will be focusing on come September, once I've got, you know, have these foreign rights going on, I have the picture book going on, which I now need to try and promote, is also more online school visits and things as well. You know, I've done a few of these in the past, and I've not charged for them, but you know, it's something that one should charge for, and find a way to monetize it but be fair at the same time.
Yeah, at least to cover your costs and then benefit hopefully from
the
sales.
I mean, just the preparation time or
Karen. It's been brilliant talking to you. I think just give us a plug again for your blog, your author site. And I know you've written a book on nonfiction, which we haven't mentioned specifically, but are really worth reading, particularly for children's authors. Yeah. So where can people find that?
Right. So selfpublishingadventures.com is my blog. And the How to Self-Publish and Market a Children's Book is on there. And I should add to that that my next project, once I clear my decks now, is I'm going to update that book, because it's 2 years old now. It's all, I future-proofed it when I wrote it, so everything in there holds. But I will be now updating some things, because obviously things have changed with regard to advertising and this, that, and the other. And it didn't go in depth into advertising anyway, and I won't go super in depth to it into advertising either, but I will sort of probably have a little checklist of things to just bear in mind when you're advertising for children. And I hope to get that out. I'd like to think it's going to be the autumn. But anybody who's already got the book, they already know there's a link to a sort of download area where I will give an overview of what the updates are, and then they can make their minds up whether they want to buy the new book or not.
Brilliant.
So that'll be on there. Yeah.
Great. Well, Karen, hopefully at some point we'll see each other in person again in London. Maybe
can I plug my little book before I go?
Yes, of course you can.
There we go. It's called The Tell Me Tree, and was inspired by a local tree on Barnes Green near to where I live. And it was going around in my head for 2 years. This is why you were asking about writing stories. And I knew I wanted to write a story about this tree, and it would be friendly, and it would be a tree that children went to, but I couldn't think what the story would be. And then I happened to overhear a conversation that somebody I don't know, a parent, saying how her child had come home from school one day and had drawn a picture, and they suddenly realized that she was really unhappy at school. And that gave me the idea. I suddenly thought, this is going to be a tree where children can come and talk and tell me your worries, tell me your cares, share your best dreams or your scary nightmares. So it can be a place where you do happy stuff or less than happy, and just encouraging children to share through writing, drawing, and it's got it's got fun activities in there and download sheets and what have you.
How lovely. The idea, I see exactly what you're talking about, that they ruminate and they come to you and they need to be written, so it's difficult sometimes to force that down a different action. Brilliant. Yeah. Karen, thank you so much. I know that children's authors will find great value in what you do and just generally a self-publishing success story, which we're always thrilled to feature.
Well, great. Well, it's great to be in the same community, isn't it?
It is. Thanks, Karen.
Take care. Bye.
This is the Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
There we go. Children's books. Now, I did notice you posted a lovely moment this week on social media about your daughter reading a Tommy Donverband book. I think you said she's got to that because they're a little bit scary for very young children. It's the whole idea of them.
She's nearly nine now, but we'd run out of, she's reading Jacqueline Wilson, and we'd run out of Jacqueline Wilson books to read. So she said, "Oh, hold on, Daddy." And she went into the cupboard where she keeps her books, and she took down the box set that Tommy sent us. There's 12 books, I think, in his series. There's certainly around 12. And she took it down and took the first one out. And I'm thinking, I haven't read this yet. So I don't, and she's not good. She's not good with being scared. She's a little bit timid sometimes. So anyway, I read to her at night time. So I lie down next to on the bed, started to read, and it was like this could go one of two ways. She may not sleep tonight because she's scared, or she'll be okay. And I think she seems to be okay. But the nice thing about it was that we raised quite a lot of money for Tommy and his family. Obviously, Tommy sadly passed away last year or the year before after a pretty nasty. Well, that's an understatement, an awful bout with cancer. And he very kindly sent me a box of books. He asked if the kids were old enough. I said not yet, but he sent them anyway. And as we opened the first one, he'd signed it to Samuel and Freya, Scream from Tommy. And I just thought, I wonder, he wouldn't have signed the other ones. And I went through, and this is from someone, I've signed quite a lot of books recently, and I went through the box, and he'd signed every one, and each one had a different message. So it was a lovely, lovely gesture. So far Freya hasn't had nightmares, so hopefully we'll be able to enjoy those books. Good read. We had fun when we started getting into them.
Yeah, so cruel that Tommy got struck down with cancer and we lost him to that. And in fact, as this podcast goes out a week on Friday from where we're recording, a week tomorrow, 2 days after this, I'm going to be cycling 100 miles for my mum, who was also taken from us with cancer 15 years ago. It feels like 5 minutes. But in her case, pancreatic cancer, which is an awful one to get. Survival rates are terrible for that. So what I might do is a sneaky little thing is I might put my Just Giving, my Virgin Giving link into the podcast notes. I won't put it into the SPF groups and songs. That's a really going a bit too far. But should people wish to help pancreatic cancer, the fight against that, I will be doing my bit on Sunday. And if you're in Cambridgeshire and you want to stand by the side of the road, I'll probably pass you at some point because 100 miles does cover the whole of Cambridgeshire. Yeah. So
I'll throw something at you.
Yeah. Yes. Bread roll. Your drive in your silent electric car and creep up behind me. Good. Okay, look, thank you very much indeed to our guest, Karen Ingalls. Always a pleasure to speak to Karen, and hopefully we will be sharing a glass of wine in person, as I said in the interview, at some point in the future. That's it, Mark. Anything else to add? Anything about Karate Kid or anything like that from the 80s throwback you want to raise again?
No, I'm done with that. I'm going to go home and I think it's quite warm actually. It's getting warm. We're going to have a warm weekend from the forecast. So I think I might jump in the pool when I get home and do some swimming.
The Apple weather app says it's going to be 35 tomorrow, which is approaching 100 degrees in the UK. So
that's hot.
That's definitely that is hot. Jump in the pool weather. Good. And I'm going to be in the Cotswolds next week. Not too far from you actually. I'm going to be cycling if you want to come out. You've got your cheaty bike there, haven't you? Your battery bike.
I'll go faster than you do.
Yeah, you do. Okay, that's it. Thank
you. I'm cheating.
Yeah. Thank you very much indeed for listening. All that remains for me to say is that it's a goodbye from him.
And a goodbye from me.
Goodbye.
Get show notes, the podcast archive, and free resources to boost your writing career at selfpublishingshow.com. Join our thriving Facebook group at selfpublishingshow.com/Facebook. Support the show at patreon.com/selfpublishingshow.
And join us next week for more help and inspiration so that you can make your mark as a successful indie author. Publishing is changing, so get your words into the world and join the revolution with The Self-Publishing Show.